Do you remember these?
Yes.
You wrote this roughly around the same time in 92. Roughly actually when I was born, funnily enough. I saw the date on the top and thought, oh, it's a few days off after my birthday.
Yeah.
And again, you put fatherhood number one, but there's a series of other things on this list of your 10 goals in life,
yeah,
which you wrote in 1992. As you reflect on those goals, do you wish you hadn't written any of them? And is there anything else you wish you had written?
No, that I wouldn't change a thing about it.
10 goals in life: become a father, find and keep a woman for me, keep my relationship with God, chase my best self, be an egotistical utilitarian, take more risks, stay close to mum and family, win an Oscar for best actor, look back and enjoy the view, just keep living.
I don't know what I'd add to that.
One of the things that you've talked a few times about is this idea of like you needing resistance.
Yeah.
You've said it two or three times. Yeah. And we're going back to what it is to be a man and what it is to be a well-orientated, stable man. Needing resistance. Is that a goal to aim for? Is that?
I think it's just a necessity for having more than just an individual life at the top of the high rise with money. If you're successful, do that. I mean, I'm supposing that whether it's different words, your friend went to Christianity for a very similar reason.
Yeah.
It's like a certain amount of guilt is very healthy. It helps us, keeps us, it's boundaries.
Boundaries.
Without any shame, without any embarrassment, without any guilt, tell me it's all just four-dimensional. Where's the form? Where's the art? It's four-dimensional. It has no form. You got to have gravity to have form. You got to have some resistance to have some form. You got to push off of something to go somewhere. You got to be, it's very hard when you're just floating and with no gravity and no resistance to actually pursue a North Star. You have no leverage.
Mm-hmm.
You're floating. Where's the art? Probably more anarchy than art. So resistance gives form. Heard a great artist say this: limitations reveal style. Resistance. Something to go, or else it's like in green lights. If life's just nothing but green lights, if you got no yellows and reds, no reasons to pause or crises that stop you, resistance? This, what are you, just going to go in circles? Do you run out of gas? Get dizzy? I don't see that. How do we evolve or devolve without resistance? Now, picking the right resistance is an art in itself. It's challenging. I've been clumsy with it in my life, especially when I got famous and got success. Man, enough people telling me I love you and the caviar and the champagne, I was like, what the shit? Why me? I don't deserve any of this. What did I do? And I'd fuck things up on purpose just to say, like, I'd trip myself running downhill so I could bloody my own nose and go, ah, now I can feel. Okay, now my heels are on the ground. It's clumsy. So I don't think we need the kind of resistance that we create that can harm us or get in our way for getting in our way's sake, because I've come to learn, and I think we all are, no, when things are going really well, resistance is going to come. If you have any ambition, resistance is going to come.
We often see resistance as a form of failure and something that we should endeavor to avoid. You think about the avoidance of like people building families or even, you know, many people consider that we're living in a bit of a comfort crisis. This is slightly a different sort of analogy, but most of the diseases that we have today, whether they're diseases of, I don't know, the mind, like, you know, people feeling lonely and isolated, or physical diseases, 80% of Americans getting back pain,
yeah,
but no one in the Hadza tribe in Africa getting back, yeah, pain. They're all a consequence of us continually choosing comfort,
yeah,
which is a short-term friend but long-term enemy. And resistance, I think, is something increasingly we can choose, opt out of.
It's a choice, too. I mean, can I hit a little point that's on this subject? It's called Tips Included. And I wrote this based on participation trophies. entitlement, how too much of something can be just as harmful as not enough, how we all need good fortune, good fate, and charity sometimes, but we shouldn't rely on that. Okay? Called tips included. All right. When extra credit's included, credit doesn't get its due. When more gives us less, the exchange rate's gone askew. When amnesty is offered going into the crime, we're more bound to commit it because there is no fine. We start playing to tie instead of going for the win when participation's the trophy for every cow in the pen. If I stay on the porch because you picked up the slack, when you look over your shoulder, I can't have your back. If there is no curfew, we're going to stay out all night. No tab at our bar, we're going to get drunk and start a fight. All these long lenses got us losing our sight. You keep lifting it from me, I'm going to lose all my might. When a 4-star duty suits a 6-star rate, we take our hands off the wheel and rely on fate. Eating all we can at the all-we-can-eat buffet gives us a 3.8 education and a 4.2 GPA. We steal from ourselves and get away with the scam. What's the measure of merit with less give a damn? These unlimited options sure have me confused, while all the conveniences are keeping me properly lubed. In this red light district with the horror of inflation, the ROI's math don't pay for vacation. So let's just admit it, this extra credit's quite a fluffer, because when the tip's included, service will suffer.
That's so good.
But it's about that. The conveniences, the long lenses, everything's like, oh, and we've out-convenienced ourselves. What's AI going to do to us? Talk about convenience. How much, and I want to keep hearing studies, I wonder if you have an opinion on this. How much of you coming up with an idea and then writing and rewriting it, thinking about it. No, that's not our next word. Oh, no, this is what I really mean and how to get it done. How much of that is really valuable to get it beyond just an intellectual idea, more valuable than just going, there it is. Because what comes out of AI, incredibly impressive. My hunch is that, yeah, we can use it for like signpost to help us. Oh, that's good. Thank you for helping me organize. But there's a value to us going through the sweat equity of learning something. How do you feel about it?
I mean, exactly what you've said, but the studies have just come out using different things like ChatGPT have actually proven what you've just said to be true. That when people use AI to produce a piece of work, not only can't they recall what they've made, but they also start speaking in language more like the AI. So they start to lose their own voice. But I mean, through history, people like Richard Feynman, the physicist, has said the best way to learn something is to learn it and then to go through the pain of writing it, right, condensing it down to a simple truth like you do so often in your new book, Poems and Prayers, and then sharing it with the world and then getting the feedback. And if the world understood it like you meant it, like that poem you just shared, you understand it. That's evidence that you get it.
Right.
So I think AI is going to be great for me saying something to you, but not learning something myself. And I think if you want to defend creativity and innovation and the ability to think, you actually have a huge opportunity, which is to go left when everyone's going right.
Right.
And it goes to what you were saying there. You were talking about be careful when you mess with incentives. Like, be careful when you choose the easier road. Be careful of the unintended consequences. And AI is a prime example of an unintended consequence of you taking the easier road today.
Yeah.
And, I just actually made a video about this, funnily enough, just warning my audience about when something appears to be like a short-term friend, it's usually a long-term enemy. Like when you choose easy today, you choose hard tomorrow. And there's always a trade-off.
Right. But if you choose hard today, you usually get easy tomorrow?
I mean, there's obviously a ton of nuance to this, but in many contexts, yes. So, for example, I was thinking of my father. My father would never have, he would avoid conflict at all costs. He would avoid the difficult conversation. And when I zoom out over the decades of his life and marriage, I go, man, that cost you big time.
You caught up with him.
Oh, my God. And me inverting that in my own life and continually just confronting it head on has had the complete opposite effect. You never, you know, like when you were talking about being a young man and making that decision because you had that voice in your head saying, law might not be my thing. And you made that phone call to your father.
Yeah.
Like what I hear you did is like you realigned yourself to you. Now, if you hadn't made that call and you'd let a couple more of those bad habits, you would have got to 40 and been like, who the fuck is this guy?
Right.
What is this life? You would have looked around and said, who is she? Who are they?
Right.
What is this job?
Right.
And that's that course correction that I think it requires you to do this, the slightly harder thing today. What do you think?
I agree with you. That's the resistance that you're choosing, you know, look, I still got to learn how to take a vacation because, you know, there's sometimes when the wind's at our back and we've earned it. Mm-hmm. There's sometimes when it's easy street and it's like, yeah, don't interrupt this, man. This is a sweet ass song. Trust that the hill's coming. Again, don't be so impressed with this and don't. What I have to do is don't fall into when things are going really well, I go, ah, there it is. That's the mean. No, it's not. Not with any ambition, it's not. Or not with life happening, it's not. But my hunch, I want to see what you think about this theory, is rather you shoot for an A and make a C, it's rather better than shooting for a C and making an F. Now, so go for perfection. Reality always comes in under it. But in that moment, when you see the inevitable reality, the outcome, the result, how quickly can we go, okay, but I got so much more out of it, the job, the person, myself, because I went for perfection. Than if I'd have just gone for, nah, dude, just pass class. It's, again, that little bit of owner's-renter's mentality. Mm-hmm. But what can be hard for me sometimes is it can take me too long to come down from when, oh, it didn't hit perfection. Mm-hmm. And maybe it takes me a week to go, dude, now do you finally realize that, of course, you weren't going to get perfection, but you got so much more out of it because you went for perfection.
Yeah.
So be pleased with reality because you got a good grade on it, man. That was good. That piece of art wouldn't have been that true if you wouldn't have been. I always say this all the time, and I never mean this in a disrespectful way. I've never done a movie or a performance that lived up to what I thought it could be because I'm thinking it can be divine. Comes out, maybe majorly inspiring, may speak to masses, may even have some magic to it, but I don't think it's divine.
That's tension.
That
unclosed gap. And I think that everything that's ever been built that's great or creatively brilliant has come from someone who has a big expectation gap. And of course, the very definition of that, you're never going to close it. And actually, probably the reason you then are motivated to move to the next thing and pursue divine again is because it wasn't divine last time. Maybe there's still something left on the table and that means you never arrive.
Right.
You talk about arrival a lot in the poems and prayers as well. I also was reflecting on your mother's words where she, at a very young age to you, position life as a dichotomy of being humble, but like know that you're the shit.
Yeah.
And all those things you went through. And it's the same thing. It's like strive for protection, perfection, but also know that nothing will ever get there. And can you be okay with that dissonance?
Right. And there's a moment. And I think it's where one of the arts of living is if you are going to prescribe to go shoot for perfection, there's that moment when reality comes in, when you had to declare. And the cards speak for themselves. And it's under. But you, because you oversaw it, it's a theory I got called oversee. Because you oversee, expect the best, this divinity out of people and art and of yourself. And then it always comes in under. How quickly can you go, ah, nice reality.
Can I ask you a question about that then? If you had aimed for something to be perfect and then it delivered itself as perfect, exactly how you had imagined, if at all possible, would that have made you happy? Would you have been...
I don't know. You're right.
Would have made you scared?
Both, probably. Because, look, I've had moments. Let me tell you one. In Africa. I'm in Mali, Africa. Doggone country. Me and my guide, who's a buddy now, Issa, we're hiking from village to village in the Banjagara. Each village is 10 to 15 miles away. I went over there needing my anonymity under the name of David. And I said I was a writer and a boxer. Well, they called me Dauda. Anyway, they didn't give a damn about the writing part, but they were very interested in the wrestling part. So each village I would go to started to catch up to me. They're like, strong white men named Dauda. You want to? And they love to wrestle over there. They love to wrestle. It's kind of a form of entertainment. The boys just walk up and start wrestling. Well, I get to this one village one night, Benji Amatu, and I'm laying there. It's a 14-mile hike to get there. I'm laying on the ground stretching. The village is all kind of come up around. And they're talking and chattering. And all of a sudden, I hear this chatter, and that's sort of at me. I can just hear it. And I look up, and I see these two boys that are about 18, and they're boom, 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 popping at me. And I can be like, and I know enough in the tone. I don't know what they're saying because they're speaking in Bambara. I'm like, are they talking shit to me? And he goes, yes. He goes, they are the wrestlers of the village. They say they are the best wrestlers in the village, and they are challenging you to wrestling match. So I was like, oh, they are. I was like, well, they sure are talking a lot. I go, I don't know if they mean it. Do y'all have this thing over here? We have a thing in America where if someone talks too much, they really don't mean it. He goes, yes, we have this. We have this. And just as that happens, you hear the crowd, wah, scream. And I look up and the two boys, bam, run off. Why? Because the real champion wrestler of the village, Michel, 5'9", tree trunk legs, about 220, burlap bag wrapped with a rope around his waist, he showed up. He doesn't say a word. He just stands over me, points to me, points to himself, and points over here. I look over where he's pointing, and there's a big dirt pit. My heart starts racing. There's the challenge. As my heart's beating, going, oh, no, I start to get up. Because as this ear saying, oh, no, I'm hearing in this ear, if you don't, you will regret this for the rest of your life. You've got to go do it. This would at least be a great story to tell. So I get up. Village goes crazy. Oh, about 80 people have gathered now. The chief comes out. I'm standing in the middle of the pit going, I'm not sure how this is supposed to go. What are the rules? Chief puts his hands on our heads. Michelle grabs me by the waist, mimics to me. I grab him by the waist. Then he burrows his forehead down into my clavicle here. And I burrow mine into his. So now we're like two bulls like this. And the chief puts his hands on our head and then raises them and goes, stop! And the crowd goes wild. Ding, ding is what dot meant. So we start going around, man. And I'm thinking, okay, I get some leverage on this guy. The legs are like tree trunks. I'm like, oh, I ain't getting him down low. So we're scrapping, grappling, boom. And I get him over, bam, flip him on his back. He flips me back over. I backflip him off my back and somersault him. He comes in, gets me in a freaking leg lock that I can barely breathe from. Almost got to tap out from. I shimmy to that thing. All of a sudden, chief comes in, separates us. I'm hyperventilating, man. Crowd's going crazy. He's got to split Michelle on this side, me on this side. These talismans that were in my beard, two of them got torn out during the wrestling match. Got blood running down me here. My knees are bleeding. My ankles are bleeding. I'm hyperventilating and covered in sweat. I look over at Michelle, who's just staring at me going, barely a glisten on him. And that's when the chief goes, dup! And I go, oh, shit, here we go. Boom, boom, boom. Grabs my waist, bop, bop, burrows his head. I burrow my head. We're off. Goes around again. Pretty damn good match. Strong. I flipped him. He pinned me. We got up, got moving. All of a sudden, chief comes in, separates us. Raises both our hands. The crowd goes crazy. Wah! As soon as he lowers our hands, Michelle runs off. Everyone sees him go, and they come in and grab me and put me on their shoulders. Dauda, Dauda, Dauda. I go over. Now I'm a big man in the village, which means they give me the best chair that has the least broken sort of, you know, straw on the seat, which means the village boy finds me the biggest chicken and plucks it and they cook it for dinner for me, which means they take me to the cleanest spot in the river. I come back that night, we eat, I get on the roof of the hut. What a magical day. I lay back. I see the Southern Cross for the first time in the sky. Like it was a neon light on a black backdrop. It was, you could not see it. It was so bright, staring me right in the face. I laid there, 30 minutes, saw 29 shooting stars. I'm going, I might have a direct line. I might be the chosen one. Wow. Just as I'm about to shut my eyes, I got a little in my throat. So I sit up, go to spit out over the, off into the, off the top of the roof. Loogie plastered to my face. I forgot I had put my mosquito net on. And I was like, oh, perfect. Just when I was thinking, I might have the direct line. I just spit a loogie in my own face. And there became the humor. Now, to finish off that story, the next morning, when I left the village, remember Michelle who ran away? Mm-hmm. I got to the edge of the village about to make the 14-mile walk to the next village. And there behind the first tree, passed off the property, popped out Michelle. Not a word. Looked at me, bowed, grabbed my hand. He walked me the 14 miles to the next village, got to the village border, the next tribe, out and walked home. I went back unannounced 6 years later, did the same trip, ran into the same people. The kids had grown 6 years older, everybody. We get to Benji Amatu. There's Michelle. He's had 5 kids and he broke his hip. So he's got a limp, right? So we all agree, not another wrestling match. We have a great dinner that night. We talk, we tell stories. They're speaking Bambara, I'm speaking English, but we're just understanding each other's sort of charades now. Get up next morning, we go to leave, find that same tree. Out pops Michelle, bows, reaches out his hand, holds my hand, and 14 miles to the next village. Stop, bows, turn around. I asked Issa back then the first time in 99 after that night when I had wrestled Michelle and he walked me the first time and I got there. I was like, what? Tell me about like, what happened last night. I do all right. He goes, oh, no, Dada. You do very well. He said, when you accept the challenge, that is when you are big man in this tribe. It was not about the win or the lose. You accept the challenge and then you wrestle Michelle, who's not only champion of this village, but of this village and tree village back. And you handle Michelle. Handled was the word. The one who loses, handled. He goes, you come back. We make money. Yeah, that's what he told me then. And I went back 6 years later and had that experience. And that experience with Michelle, the respect we had for each other, he walked me, broken hip and all, the 14 miles to the next village.
You accept the challenge.
You accept the challenge. That is when you are a big man in this village. Because I was like, they put me on their shoulders, man. What was it? He was like, oh, you are a big man when you accept the challenge. He said, whole village think Michelle going to have a strong white man named Dauda on back in 10 seconds. Over. But you handled Michelle. Not win or lose. Handled. But you were a big man when you accepted the challenge. Beautiful. And then he's there 6 years later and walks me the same way. I mean, I think your question was on, you know, when we know or how confident when we're feeling like we're on the right path, which that was a time when I thought I was so much. I was like, think I might be there. You know, loogie in my face. For, and that to me was God going, you're doing good, but not that good, bud.
What you just listened to was a most replayed moment from a previous episode. If you want to listen to that full episode, I've linked it down below. Check the description. Thank you.